Welcome to Embrace Your Brain's exciting new series called Embracing the Mature Mind. Join Dr. Dee Coulter as she explores the natural brilliance awaiting us all in the upper decades.
Welcome to the podcast. Today's topic, understanding and overcoming apathy. Recently, we've been talking about learned helplessness, the act of giving up. And today we're going to address the last focus, apathy. It's the hardest one to address. It's an end-of-the-line kind of giving up that's really hard to shake. So let's look at a few of the kinds of folks who are caught up in apathy and see if we can see why. One group is middle school and high school kids. During COVID, their culture of school got disrupted. The pattern of attending and learning broke down. And now, a lot of them, even the finest students, are not motivated. Their attendance they see as optional. They're capable, but they don't care. In other words, they're apathetic. We see this in a lot of new employees. The jobs are plentiful enough, it's easy to get them. But once the novelty wears off, there's no second wind. They just quit and look for a new job. The rhythm of growing dedication, competence, and a sense of belonging doesn't kick in. Again, they get apathetic. The social culture is also being impacted. The financially insecure ones, the growing numbers that are uncertain about food and shelter, and those who are enduring ethnic and racial shunning and devaluing and exclusions, they too are susceptible to becoming apathetic. We see it in the political culture too. With their bleak pictures of the future, politicians are leading many to lose interest even in voting. While most of us, even in these circumstances, endure when faced with heavy burdens and obstacles and doubts, many others have lost hope that the future has any possibilities for them. They've given up and fallen into a state of deep hopelessness and have settled into apathy. There are many kinds of apathy. Some arise when the mind gives up, others when the heart falls into despair, and still others arise when the will has collapsed. Let's look at each of these three realms more closely. The will gives up when there's no sense of personal power, no sense that you can impact the events that are happening to you. They just happen to you, and they're all likely to be events that are grim. Life isn't safe or secure. There's a sense of no dignity, no empowerment, no agency in one's own life, a sense that fate happens to them. They're not in charge. The heart gives up when there's no sense of connection. They may see others as socially engaged while they feel like outsiders. They may be isolated, loners, invisible. They're not seen and recognized. They're not respected. No one's interested in them. They become emotionally numb and they're left with a sense of indifference. Or emotionally blunted, in which case they seek out extreme risk and sensations just to feel anything. The mind gives up when it's faced with no sense of meaning or purpose. No curiosity, no desire to learn or build skills. There's little interest in self-care or attending to physical health. No initiative, no seeking of rewards, no planning ahead. When we fall into apathy, we've lost touch with two things, a sense of path and a sense of resiliency. Let's start with path. What does that mean, a sense of path? Well, you know, normally we have dreams, pictures about possible someday times. And we set goals, we prepare ourselves, we work toward those dreams. We may build knowledge and skills and talents. And at the everyday level, we look at the present moment with glances down the road to steer ourselves, as if we're using some kind of headlights. In tough times, we may stay on the low beam, looking just far enough ahead to cope with the day, but in easier times, we might use the high beam so we can look farther down the road as we travel. Our dreams and goals and headlights are all involving a nice network in our brain called the fast-forward network. But we've had so many disruptions, the most profound perhaps being COVID's prolonged isolation and health crisis. They've shocked the cultural, social, and economic fabric of our society, and they've weakened our confidence in that feed-forward network. It's drawn our sense of path into question. Our rehearsed dreams about our future may have been shattered or seem out of reach. We're shocked that we aren't meeting the milestones we expected. We say things like, well, by now I thought I'd at least be, or by now I was supposed to have, and I was supposed to be doing. We're shocked when finances have no traction. It's impossible to save, or getting ahead is a myth. We're shocked when the nightly news, the political rhetoric, and the talk of those around us are all painting a bleak picture of the future. In this climate, many are overwhelmed by these shocks and conclude that there is no appealing picture of the future for them, or that somehow they're on the wrong path. They're headed for disaster, and they can't turn their life around anyway. Or even worse, they no longer see any path. They stop thinking ahead, stop planning, stop working toward rewards. Their despair has finally become deadened. Just talking about all this can pull us down into despair. But for most of us, all we have to do is think of that one person in our lives who lives resiliently, and we recover our sense that life is indeed workable. Resiliency was discovered to be the one characteristic that all survivor personalities have in common, and is our best hope for recovery from apathy. So what does this resiliency look like? Well, it has many facets, and if we can just awaken any one facet in those afflicted with apathy, their life could again become workable. I mean, think of your most inspiring friends. There are those whose will inspires you. They strive for success, to accomplish things whenever possible, and they can surrender with grace when success can't happen. They endure through the challenging periods, and they keep seeing life as workable. They're patient, and they're willing to take small steps when the big ones can't be taken yet. There are those whose heart inspires us. They appreciate even the smallest bits of joy, humor, and beauty in life. They care for others, and they share what they have. They express gratitude freely and often, and they show interest in us as well. They not only enjoy connections and a feeling of well-being, but can live into sorrow when life presents the losses and tragedies that are also a part of life. And then there are those whose minds inspire us. They're always curious. They think deeply about what puzzles them, and then they offer great insights or a pattern that they've finally discovered. They not only love to ponder life, they also enjoy the deep silence of nature and the stillness of a quiet mind. So what are the solutions to all of this? How can we possibly meet and help dissolve the apathy that surrounds us? Well, the first principle is to be the change that we want to see. We need to live into our own resiliency. We need to work with the highs and lows in our lives with grace and workability. We need to anchor our lives in the here and now, not some idealized dream that may never come to pass, and be honest about the picture we hold for others, too. Are we giving up on other individuals or groups? We must strive to see the goodness and worth of all others. Any great teacher, skilled therapist, or gifted parents is going to tell you, you gotta love them. Then they can hear you and learn to love themselves. So let's close with a few small offerings that we could make to those around us and to our society. We could rekindle hearts. We can show respect and interest in others, really see them and appreciate their value. We can offer small gestures that show that we care and that we're interested in them. We can share our enjoyment of nature and the arts and humor as a way to introduce nuances and subtle feelings. We can rekindle minds. We can awaken curiosity by sharing little bits of interesting information. We can introduce new skills that will make the tasks easier next time. We can gently help them bracket. This ability to bracket is the one skill that resilient folks have in common. It's what keeps them from collapsing into giving up and falling into apathy. It's as if they put time and space limits on problems. They bracket these sense. They say, hey, this isn't going to last forever, or it's not going to affect every aspect of my life. This bracketing makes hard times less difficult to endure. We can gently remind those who struggle with apathy about that view. We can rekindle wills. But I give you a sense of warning here that these remedies are going to stir up anger and indignation. Because if you help someone suffering from apathy to identify what's triggering that despair and give it a name, their first reaction is going to be to be mad at that situation. You'll want to have an outlet for expressing that protest. Also, they may need to have basic support to get unstuck or become successful. So you want to put some services in place to help them succeed. And this brings us to a fresh look at cultural apathy. We can put many activities in place to help at that level, too. There are many activities fostering a sense of empowerment. Look at the voting rights campaigns. Look at addressing discrimination issues. Look at employment, housing, and food security support. We're offering a sense of belonging at times. Look at the safety nets we create. We're protecting from insecurities around housing and food. We're offering a way to get traction instead of always backslide. And we're also fostering a sense of worth and pride. We say, thank you for your service to a serviceman. We appreciate that, of course, Black Lives Matter. We honor the food, the traditions, and the arts of different groups. If we can support one another in living engaged and workable lives, we can overcome the spread of apathy that's concerning us all. I really hope you'll join me in this important conversation. Please send your comments for sharing to d@embraceyourbrain.com. I look forward to hearing from you.